Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, May 10th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, and we're going to present an interview with the movie's director, Wes Ball. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, 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 yeah.
BJ, what did you think about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes? We're going to do a spoiler-free little discussion here, and then we'll get into some spoiler stuff later. But what did you think about this movie?
Oh, I love my ape boys. I love them so much. No, I really, really enjoyed Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. And I'll admit I was a little hesitant at first because I thought the previous trilogy was such a strong installment. But Wes Ball is cooking with gas in this movie, and he is remembering that in an action adventure movie, you also need adventure, because this is such an adventure.
Yeah, I feel like this movie stands on the shoulders of the trilogy that came before. I mean, it is very much not a, Caesar, the main character played by Andy Serkis in those movies, is not a main character of this film, but his legacy, his shadow looms so large in this movie. I just feel like that's a really smart approach to continuing this franchise instead of doing something, you know, set in the immediate aftermath. There's been enough time that's passed in this world to provide for really interesting interpretations of the lessons that he sort of imparted to his fellow apes in the previous movie. So I really love the structural stuff here. I think it's just a pretty solid script. And I think also Wes Ball is just like, I had not seen any of the Maze Runner movies, but people have been telling me for years, like, hey, this guy's legit. And now seeing it, I'm like, yep, this guy seems pretty legit. Yeah. So,
and I love exactly what you said with the Caesar legacy and how it is a part of it, because this is taking place a couple hundred years later. So it's also a great examination in the ways that, you know, history changes over time, stories get lost, they get reinterpreted like a game of telephone. And I thought that was a really interesting way to approach the mythos of, you know, the apes and how their planet came to be, what their relationship is with humans. Really fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and then there's obviously like the real world component that's always been there for these apes movies, of like commenting on real world stuff, and like that tact that they took in terms of telling the story is just really interesting to think about, like how religion operates in our current society, and sort of the idea of like twisting words around to amass your own power, or sort of poisoning original teachings and sort of various interpretations and factions splitting off from that. All of that stuff is like really juicy stuff to drop into the middle of a summer movie. So I appreciated that. It felt like they actually had something to say there, which is always nice.
And I also think that by taking the approach that, you know, Noah, who is our lead chimp here, it's both a hero's journey and a coming of age story, which is something very fresh to this franchise. I thought that was also very, very smart, because it's clear that this movie is not trying to be a reboot, and it's certainly not trying to be a rehash. It's trying to expand the possibilities of this incredible world that has existed for over, you know, 50 years in, you know, American cinema.
Yes, 100%. So I wanted to know what other stuff you thought this movie does well.
I really, really like that it brings back levity. I know that in our review written by Whitney Seibold, he talks about that, about how the original Planet of the Apes movies, there's almost whimsy to them. And then in this most recent trilogy, it's very bleak. It's a very much a reflection of our own very broken society that we have now. And this movie doesn't forget that brokenness and that bleakness of that trilogy, but injects a lot of life into this story, where there's jokes, there's warmth between the characters. Mm-hmm. I love, you know, Rocka having these like very silly lines every once in a while. There's one that I don't want to say until we get into spoiler territory, but it made me laugh like very hard out loud in the middle of the theater. And I like having that balance back, because ultimately we know where the Planet of the Apes stories end up, because the first movie is essentially the last movie. We're working in reverse here. Mm-hmm. And so we know where we're heading. And the fact that it's not feeling like we're on the Green Mile the entire way there is great.
Yeah. So you mentioned Rocka. Shout out to Peter Macon, who is the actor who plays Rocka, who is like the orangutan sage figure who sort of offers advice and becomes kind of like a father figure to Noah, who is played by Owen Teague. I thought the performances across the board were pretty solid. I don't know if I could pick out like a weak link, mm-hmm. but I thought Owen Teague was exceptional and Peter Macon was just great. Like, his voice in particular is so amazing. It reminded me of like that sort of a velvety baritone of like Lawrence Fishburne or somebody like that.
Yeah, so. Very much so.
Did you have any other performances that you wanted to highlight?
I love Owen Teague so much. I've been a big fan of his for a while. He's in one of my favorite Black Mirror episodes, Archangel, which is the one Jodie Foster directed about like the helicopter parenting app. And he's really young in that one. And I remember watching that episode and going, that kid, like he's got something, like he's doing a good performance here. And then he's been doing some indie movies here and there that I think he's really strong in. So this being his like introduction to like the world, this is his big like Hollywood breakthrough, I think is such a good choice for him, because he's doing so much emotional work with his face that you can still see beneath, you know, the digital ape face. You can see all the work that's going on there. I think he has such a great command of his voice, a great command of his body. Like, this is such a star-making role for him. And to follow the brilliance that Andy Serkis brought, somebody who has so much experience working in this sort of environment, and for him to come into this fresh and knock it out of the park like that was so impressive to me.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so in terms of like shortcomings, I had a really good time with this movie. I feel like this film didn't quite pack the same emotional punch as some of the previous movies did for me. And I thought it also kind of lost a little bit of steam, I guess, story-wise, once it got to Proximus's beach camp, which is, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes in or something. Like, you know, I thought, I guess to put it another way, I think it didn't quite end as strong as it started, because the beginning of this movie is incredible. Like the climb, retrieving the eagle eggs and stuff like that. Like, I just thought that was such a smart way to introduce us to these characters in this world and sort of lay out the geography of a big part of where this movie takes place, and sort of like show, not tell us exactly what happened to, you know, and exactly like how far along we are in the timeline in terms of like the disintegration of human landmarks and things like that. I just thought it was like a really, really cool way to introduce us into that world. So I appreciated that. But yeah, like story-wise, I feel like it kind of like maybe hit a plateau. It didn't necessarily dip dramatically. I wasn't like, oh God, this ending was bad or anything like that. I just feel like story-wise, the beginning was so strong that it kind of like hit a plateau and just kind of stayed there instead of continuing all the way on an upward trajectory. But what did you think about any shortcomings or any flaws that might have jumped out at you?
I wish that we would have gotten a little bit more time at the beach camp before we head into like our big climax, if only to get a better understanding of what life is like at the beach camp with all of the apes that have been, you know, brought there with beyond their will. I think that would have allowed the ending stakes to feel a bit more severe for me, but this is already the longest movie in the entire franchise, so I don't think they were going to be able to get away with that.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's nothing in, like, before they get there, there's nothing I would get rid of. So it's like, well, either we stay longer or this, you know, this climax isn't going to hit quite as hard as I think that it could have. But I also think that there, in no universe should this be the only movie. I think this needs to be another trilogy. And I think they should trust Wes Ball's vision, because he clearly has an idea of where this needs to go next. And in talking with him, he definitely knew where he knows where he wants this to go, and I want to see it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, I guess I would say it speaks well of the movie that, like, even if that ends up not happening and, like, they just stop making these movies forever, I feel like it feels like a complete story, this movie does. I feel like the arc of the Noah character from where he begins to where he ends is, like, satisfying to me, and mm-hmm. Of course I would be interested to see what else he does, you know, going forward if they go that way. But I think that's an underrated quality of modern blockbuster filmmaking, is giving an audience an experience that makes them feel satisfied in and of itself, you know, instead of just, like, being an open-ended thing, that cliffhanger that kind of relies on another project to come along and stick the landing. So I just want to shout that out. All right, let's take a break. And then when we come back, we'll talk about some spoilers and then feature your interview with Wes Ball.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort. Thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/RedCircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/RedCircle.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
All right, so what kind of spoilery stuff did you want to call out here? I have a few things written down, but I want you to go first.
Sure. So my first one is the line that Raka says that made me laugh out loud is when May, the human who at this point they think is feral because they don't realize that she's intelligent yet, he says, "We'll call her Nova. We call them all Nova." I don't know why I lost it, because that is just a great evergreen apes joke that's for the real ones out there, which I absolutely loved.
Yeah, I've only seen the previous trilogy and then the very first Planet of the Apes movie, and I have not seen that one in a long time, but I remembered that there was a female character in that film called Nova, and I was like, oh, okay, that's what's mm-hmm. going on there. So I don't know if that's you know, if there's a deeper level to that joke.
There's,
you know,
like,
if you watch
there's
bunch
like
of those films.
Three or four Novas in the franchise.
Okay.
Which is just really funny to me. So it's a great joke. Very, very funny. Just wanted to shout that out because it's a great line. But the big spoiler thing that, like, really, really got me is, you know, there's this vault that is containing all of, you know, essentially human history is locked in this vault. Our weapons, our intelligence, our stories. And at one point, the chimps are in there and they find a stack of books. And the first one on top is like the Dr. Seuss ABC book. And the pit in my stomach that hit immediately of, oh, my God. I know they're going to find a book in here that's going to show a zoo, and they're going to see what life was like for apes and chimps before everything happened. Mm-hmm. It, like, viscerally upset me in a way I was not anticipating because it's so small, but because of what the Planet of the Apes movies have always been as, like, a reflection of our own, like, political society and, you know, the things that we're doing, like, watching characters come face to face with the horrors of their history is just something that's deeply upsetting to me, especially because Noah has so much trust in May, and to know this is the world that she wants to go back to and like this is what she's fighting for, that betrayal is and it's all just done through like children's pictures, because ultimately like you don't have to have some big important monologue to make a point. It literally can be as simple as a children's drawing to illustrate your point, and it does it so wonderfully. And like even thinking about it now, like I'm filled with so much existential dread about it, because humans are such bastards. Like we're such horrible creatures, and we should be very grateful that we are at the top of the food chain, because we're monsters.
Yeah, we absolutely are. And I think the movie kind of has its cake and eats it too in that regard, because there is a little bit of a speech, but not like a big grandstanding kind of speech between Noah and May at the end of the movie, where he talks about like, you know, what do you want us to do, basically? Like, do you want us to go back to being silent? Which I just thought was like so powerful, that confrontation between those two characters. And like the groundwork for that is laid in that scene that you're talking about. And the movie does not really make a meal out of that. Like these characters, the ape characters who stumble across those books, that scene is so subtle. Like they read and they learn and they process, but they don't react really in that moment. They save the reaction for later on, and you understand later, like, oh, okay, like they definitely understand what this means, and that humans are sort of like the the villains of this story. So
I mean, and ultimately, like the reason that the world is the way that it is because of us. Like we did this to ourselves.
Yeah.
And so to see, you know, it's like it's so human of us to refuse to accept that we are the problem, that we are the people who did this, and to be like, no, but I want it to go back to the way that it is. I have a lot of very strong COVID-19 feelings about the read of this movie and how many people are so desperate to like, no, we want to go back to normal. We're going to ignore this, you know, horrible thing that's in front of our faces. And it's like, but you can't. Like the world is different now. And like, that's how this world is. Like you can't put the apes and the chimps back in cages. The world is different now. And you need to accept that it's different now. And so like, I think that's why it got me so much, because, you know, I'm very immunocompromised. My entire world has been dramatically shifted and continues to be dramatically shifted because of COVID. And I feel like I'm going insane half the time because people are like, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal at all. And so to watch May be like, we have to go back. It was ours first. I'm like, shut up. No, it's different now.
Yeah, I mean, talking about this movie is like a reflection of some of the political stuff that's going on right now. Like, I feel like the killing William H. Macy, to me, that felt representative of, you know, like the younger generation's unwillingness to accept conventional ways of doing things. I thought about the protests that are happening on college campuses where people are putting their bodies on the line to stand up and say, hey, a genocide is happening to the Palestinian people right now, and we don't think our institutions should be funding it, and we don't think our government should be facilitating it. And I thought about the line in The Last Jedi when I think it's Kylo Ren says, like, let the past die, kill it if you have to. And I thought about, you know, there's a line in this movie where one of the characters, it might have been Noah, says, like, that is the law, but the law is wrong. And I thought a lot about, like, the corrupt Supreme Court that we have right now. Like, there's just so much going on in this movie that that I really appreciated, all these sort of, like, different layers and levels that you can read into it.
Absolutely. And the thing I appreciate the most is that it doesn't feel like the movie is intentionally going, and this is a metaphor for this. Like, it never feels that way. It just feels so naturally embedded into the DNA of this movie, which is also like existentially, you know, crisis inducing, because it's a reminder that our history is just constantly repeating itself, because this is a 55-year-old franchise and it still feels thematically relevant after all these years. Because we are the damn dirty apes, goddammit.
Yeah. There was one other line, you know, on the complete opposite end of the serious spectrum. There's one other thing that I wrote down here that I wanted to mention, where I love the eagles continuing to peck Proximus all the way down that long fall that he has. Like, they were really twisting the knife in there and just not giving him even 1 second of peace at the end. Even like on his death fall, they're like, we are going to torment you until the last possible second. I just thought it was really great. But yeah, all the bird stuff and the sort of relationship between the apes and the eagles in this movie, I thought was really well done. And all of it looks great too. I mean, I don't know if we said that explicitly, but like this movie looks incredible. So
yeah, it's really beautiful. Like if anybody was worried about Wes Ball making a Legend of Zelda movie, this should hopefully like calm anyone's anxieties about it, because the man can build a world and it is beautiful.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the very end of the movie. I guess before we do that, do you have any other things that you wanted to call out before we get to the very end?
Oh, that Proximus was right. And he's just going about it in the wrong way, which I think is also like an incredibly human reflection, even though obviously like he's a gorilla, but he's right. Like, yeah, the humans will try to like destroy us to get back to the way things were. And he's just, you know, going about his way of preventing that in the entirely wrong way. But I also like that May starts out as, you know, a character that we know has kind of in this world nefarious intent, but by the end of it, she does gain understanding and she does, you know, she's offered peace and she takes it. And I think that that's really wonderful, because that is the thing that Proximus never would have been able to do. So I find
that's interesting. I don't know if I got that from the end of the movie, that she takes peace. I kind of understood the very end where she like, you know, gets into that vault and she gets the, I forget what it's called, like the SATCOM database thing that she takes back to the humans. I kind of thought that was like her kind of escaping by the skin of her teeth, basically. And then like the fact that she gave that to the humans who are at that base, I feel like if she really learned the lesson that, you know, Noah wanted her to learn, she would have broken that thing before she actually gave it back to her people. But that's what I wanted to talk to you about. Like, I think this movie is interesting the way that it ends, because in many ways I felt like the film is kind of about finding and creating community, but it ends by cross-cutting those moments of the humans communicating with one another across the planet thanks to that SATCOM link, with imagery of the apes and the big thing that they're looking into, the telescope, where they're like looking to the stars. And to me, that was kind of like underlining the message that William H. Macy's character says earlier, where the humans need to stop clinging onto the thing, the way that things were, and start really like grappling and engaging with the way that things actually are. And while the humans are still trying to sort of scrap their way back into being the dominant species on the planet by communicating with each other again, the apes are like looking to the skies and expanding their knowledge base and incorporating their knowledge into these new communities that they're building. So I just thought it was like a really fascinating way to end the film. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I didn't think that May really learned the lesson that that she could have learned by the end of it, but maybe you have a different read on that.
Yeah. So the read that I had is, because, you know, we get the shot of her when she's, you know, meeting with Noah and she has, you know, a weapon with her and then does not use it. And she still gives, you know, the SATCOM to the humans, because the way that I read it, and I'm sure that once we get more movies, that will be more crystallized, is her having the realization that there has to be a, like, they have to coexist, that it can't be one or the other. It's honestly, it's a very Barbie ending of like, you know, it can't be, you know, Barbie and Ken, it has to be Barbie and Ken. right. And it's like, it can't be humans and apes. It has to be humans and apes. Like, it has to be this way. And so in order for that to truly exist, humans have to share the knowledge they have with the apes. They can't keep hiding out underground. We have to find a way to be able to marry these two worlds and these two societies. And I think she's a little bit idealistic at this point, because again, we know where this is heading. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, there's like such a tragic cloud that hangs over the future of what's going on here. But I guess there is still room, you know, if you have that more sort of, I guess, optimistic reading of it, then that creates so much more room for drama for stories that can be told in between this one and the 1968 movie. So yeah, hopefully they get a chance to explore that further in future films and stuff. I wonder where that might happen, when that might happen in Wes Ball's schedule, because of that Zelda thing that you mentioned, and like how many years it might be before we see a continuation of this, because we got three apes movies from 2011 to 2017. And so like, maybe I can imagine a similar span there of time where like, mm-hmm. maybe it'll take about that same time or something to get maybe three more movies or something like that. So yeah, we'll have to wait and see. But anything else you wanted to mention about this film before we set up your interview with Wes Ball?
The water set pieces look incredible, considering we are dealing with like pretty much fully digitized performances, and water is usually like the death knell of any of that. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear. It's like, oh yeah, Weta also worked on Avatar. Don't you forget.
Yeah, I thought a lot about Avatar: The Way of Water, especially at the very end of this movie during those big water sort of climactic action scenes. And I remember reading somewhere, I think this is correct, I'll have to go back and double check this, but I think that like none of the water in that movie is real.
Yeah, I don't think any Avatar. Of it's real.
Yeah. And so I can totally, you know, this movie, I think, does a pretty good job of incorporating like, of not feeling as cartoonish, I guess you could say, as the worlds of the Avatar movies do. I feel like this one is obviously enhanced by a ton of CG and visual effects and stuff like that, but it feels a little bit more grounded. It feels like maybe they were working on like set extensions and things like that, where characters are actually like walking around in real spaces and interacting with real props and stuff like that, in a way that, you know, everything is digital in the Avatar movies. So, but yeah, I was wondering if the water that we all saw in this movie, even with the May human character like interacting with water, like how much of that was real and how much of it was just like completely fake and all done in a computer or whatever. So, yeah, it was very, very effectively done. Okay, so let's set up this Wes Ball interview. Anything that you think people should know, or should we just jump right into it?
So a thing that you will not know, because this is an audio format, is this interview is conducted outside at the beautiful Descano Gardens, which also means that at one point I am being such a champion because there is absolutely a bug like in my ear flying around like as I'm doing this interview. And you will never know because I held it together because I am a professional. So there's that. But also at one point I do talk with Wes Ball about Mouse Guard, which is a movie that he was working on that didn't come to fruition, but he eventually released like a 10-minute, you know, version. There was like some concept art that's available online that you can, you know, find that is just so, so beautiful. And that is a project that I really hope that eventually gets to happen. And I think I even say in the interview, like, I hope that Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes does so well that people are like, what if we actually let you do Mouse Guard? So that might be a thing people are not super familiar with, but if you look at those visuals, you're gonna like, your eyes are gonna fall out of your head. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we covered that stuff back in the day at Slash Film. So I'm going to try to, if I can, I'm going to try to find our old articles about that and link to them in the show notes. So in the meantime, here is BJ's conversation with Wes Ball.
Thank you so much for talking with me, and congratulations on a phenomenal film. Oh, yeah, good. Absolutely loved it. Good. So my first question for you is that this movie has so much story about Caesar and his legacy, both well-intended mm-hmm. and somewhat corrupted.
Yeah, sure.
And for you, joining such a huge legacy franchise, what was it like working on a legacy franchise while also working on a story that is all about legacy?
Yeah, that was the key, I think, for us. That was, if we couldn't crack that, I wouldn't have made the movie, you mm-hmm. know? If it was just a direct sequel, I kind of personally would not have been interested in it. Mm-hmm. The fact that we can kind of stand on our own a little bit, but still have this spirit of the previous movies hanging over our story, it gave richness to the story in really unique ways, I think, you know. So yeah, that was a very conscious kind of decision that we got to explore kind of what has happened to the myth and legend of this great ape that we all fell in love with, you know, and how this story of his, how Noah comes to interact with that story,
mm-hmm.
different versions of the story, and how it changes him into his character that he ultimately becomes by the end of the movie, forever changed, you know? Yeah, it was great. It was really, really fun to play with. And, you know, I was very aware of the expectations and the,
of course,
and sort of the desire for it to be good. We all had the same desire. I'm fans of all these movies, the previous three, the original 68 one especially. So yeah, we hope we've made something that kind of fits, that belongs with all these other movies with us. We're the 10th movie of the franchise over 55 years, and hopefully we're one of the good ones. You know?
And I'm glad that you brought up the incorporation of a lot of the older movies, because there's a bit of lawmaker in some of Caesar's stories. So I was curious, how do you determine which aspects of the older movies to incorporate in this new one?
Yeah, I mean, that's the beauty of it. We have like this great wealth of the Caesar storyline behind us, and we get to look forward to that 68 version of reality there. It's nice guidelines, actually. It's like they're very far away, so you don't feel constrained by it all. Mm-hmm. But you get to kind of like think about, how did they get to that place, and where did that come from? And we get to explore all that stuff here, which is great. You know what I mean? That's just good stuff to mine. So you know, it comes from just a place of love of those originals, and you know, Rick and Amanda, who really started this whole reboot, you know, the Rise. They came on as writers and producers on this movie, and they've been thinking about those questions for a long time too. So yeah, we're in good hands, you know, moving forward, I think, if we're lucky enough to make more, you know.
And thinking about your introduction to Apes, I would love to know, what is your origin story with this franchise?
Yeah, it was a 68. It was the original Planet of the Apes. I was a kid. I don't really remember my first reaction of the movie, honestly. Mm-hmm. I was probably so young. My dad was probably watching it on TV or something. I'm sure the concepts went over my head. I don't remember having a reaction to the Statue of Liberty or anything, but I remember those images, mm-hmm. you know, them running through the grass, all that stuff, apes on horses, you know. I remember the set designs, you know, so those images are kind of, you know, etched in my brain, my early, you know, sponge of a mind for movies, you know. So, yeah, that's kind of where my DNA begins, I think, with that original 68. Movie, you know.
I love that. For me, it was seeing Paul Williams on Late Night in full ape regalia,
nice.
Singing and smoking
what
cigarettes.
Is this?
And that was exactly it. I was
what is happening? First thing is the musical in Simpsons. That
right?
would be amazing, you know.
Absolutely. But thinking about the original series, there's always a sense of humor that's like, there's a playfulness in a lot of the original stuff. And then I would say in the most recent trilogy, these are very serious ape movies. And I was so pleased in watching your movie that there is a little bit of, there's this humor in here. There are these really big moments of levity. So I'm curious, when you're working on this, where do you determine, okay, we need to have Rocka, you know, have the jaw drop and drop the blanket. We need that reaction.
That was the only thing that the studio kind of asked. Mm-hmm. Was that, could we find a tone that was a little lighter, I suppose, you know, without compromising all the things that make these movies great, which is mature storytelling and, you know, real stakes and real drama and conflict, all that stuff. And I was happy to go there, because my instincts naturally go there anyway. We thought of this more as an adventure movie, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a young character this time, right? He's very innocent. And that's probably where the humor comes from, is that innocence, you know what I mean? Or that sense of being kind of behind on the knowledge of things, you know? And there's more that we actually had to cut out for time, but maybe we'll get in there for another version of the movie or something. But yeah, you know, just try to get people a good time in the theater, you know what I mean? You know, try to have some nice, you know, contemplate big ideas next to a campfire, but also, you know, running through the fields being chased by giant, you know, gorillas, and also just some fun moments where you can smile and have a good time and meet these characters, fall in love with these characters, you know. We tried, so.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when it first started, I was so excited to see Noah and his little crew. I'm like, oh, this is a coming of age story. This is a coming of age slash hero's journey for him.
Yeah.
This is wonderful. Such a refreshing choice.
That's good. Cool.
And then I was also thinking, you know, with May almost feels like she's being pulled out of Richard Matheson's I Am Legend, in the sense that
she carries with her the darkness of the previous movie.
Yeah, she's carrying that with her.
And that surrounds all of humanity.
Absolutely.
That they are the responsible for where this world ultimately ended up. But I think what's interesting about her role is that she changes almost to become more optimistic and hopeful by the end.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He offers peace, and she takes it, mm-hmm. you know, with her to her world. And so it's kind of interesting that she starts in a dark place and kind of ends in a place of, you know, there's the dynamic and relationship that forms between these two characters, as complicated as it is, as it becomes, is going to be crucial moving forward. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely this lesson of, you know, learning from your community, learning from those around you, because when we do see her, we know as the humans watching this, we know how we treat apes. We,
yeah, sure.
When they get into the vault and they open the book and they pull up the letters, my first thought was, oh, they're going to see.
Yeah,
there's going
right.
to be a zoo. They're going to know and everything's going to be destroyed.
And Proximus just told him that.
Yeah.
It's Proximus.
Because he's
right.
right. He's right.
Yeah, it's a cool bunch of interesting little things there, you know?
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you brought up Proximus because he's this character that I don't think we see enough of anymore, which is a ruler that has righteous anger and is right.
Sure, yeah.
But of course, it's not maybe the most polite way
that's
of
right.
going about
he
things.
Maybe does it the wrong way. And that's a question about, you know, Noah is this, he has multiple father figures that shows up in his life in this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of them end.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see how those different ideas, these little angels on his shoulder, whispering to him about how he's going to choose where to go into the future. That's what's going to be really fun to explore, I think, if we're lucky enough to keep going with the movies, you know, about just how this character, this innocent kind of blank slate, you know, of a character is changed forever, you know, by the end. By the things he's learned, you know what I mean? It's kind of cool.
Because ultimately with like coming of age stories, coming of age isn't just yourself coming of age, it's also getting to that moment where you realize the adults in your life are fallible
yeah,
and which, they're not perfect.
Yeah, which is to me a big, you know, a big moment I think growing up is when you realize, the elders in my life are wrong and fallible, you know? And that's a big idea I think that Noah has to arrive at, you know, to question the people that came before, but without losing a sense of respect
Absolutely.
And honor for it, right? So that's the trick, you know? That's a cool idea, I thought, as we touched on at least lightly, you know?
Because I definitely think the teen years and into the early 20s are some of my favorite characters to look at because this is when they are their most passionate and they have like their biggest
quest
for justice, right? And
they
all think they're invincible
yes.
and then they have to realize, you know, things
right.
are falling apart,
yeah.
things are hard, they don't have as much power as they once thought that they did.
Totally.
So getting to see a character explore that through this but be, you know, in the world of Planet of the Apes, I thought was such a wonderful choice.
That's good. That's cool.
So another thing I wanted to talk about is the visual effects in this are beautiful.
That's cool.
And the world that you've built is lush and it like you feel like you are in it and immersed in it.
Yeah.
So as a director, how do you figure how to give direction to people not knowing 100% what this final product's going to look like?
Yeah, well, we had a lot of I tend to write in pictures, you know, early on. Sometimes it's not even the script, and it ends up winding up in the script because we find it in the image, you know, like, that's where my approach is visual. I'm better at taking text to the visual, not putting a vision down to text, you know. I work on the different side of things. So I rely on the writers, you know, to help us move forward. You know, a lot of it is me showing them all that artwork, you know, giving them a sense of it, and then just acting it out for them like an idiot, you know, running around trying to make everyone see the same thing. That's the trick, you know, for me, for these kind of movies, is somehow you get them seeing the same movie in their head, you know, and then you rely on them to make choices based on that, and you trust them to go forth. It's a collaborative kind of art form, as is always said, you know, and that applies both to my cinematographer, Jula, and my production designer, Dan Dorrance, and my editors, you know, Dan and Dirk, who did this fantastic job. That's kind of the job, I guess, is to kind of like corral everyone into this that way. You know what I mean? Hopefully it all works out in the end, you know?
And so Owen Teague's kind of has to carry this entire movie on his shoulders. And I think if you know his work previously, you're like, oh yeah, he's capable, he can do this. But
good.
I think a lot of people...
I think this will be an introduction to him.
Yeah, I don't think a
movie.
Lot of people are as familiar with him. But so what was it about his, you know, audition, his performance, where you were like, that's it, that's my Noah?
Yeah, it was his tape he sent in. And I tend to cast on instinct, you know. I don't kind of overthink it too much. And I don't know, I just, that's him. That's him. And it was just immediate, you know what I mean? He was like the second tape that I saw, the first or second tape that I saw.
Oh, wow.
And I was terrified. How do we find someone who's going to fill, Andy Serkis's shoes? How are we going to do this? And this tape shows up. Oh, this is going to be easy, you know? And then I kept looking, of course, just to see, but I kept going back to Owen. It was so perfect. And then you talk to him, he's just a nice guy. He's so humble, but he cares so much about doing his best. And he works hard. And I think he deserves a lot of credit, for carrying the load of the responsibility that was on him for this movie. You know, he carried this movie, like you said. He's a straight man. You know, he might not get a lot of the credit, I think, all these colorful characters around him, mm-hmm. but the movie works because of him, you know, and all the characters that kind of, you know, interface with him as a character. So he deserves a lot of credit, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, he's the beating heart, and so yeah. without him, you know, everything would fall apart. And so I have time for one last question. I am one of the people that is forever mourning Mouse Guard.
yes.
I assume you are
as
well.
Rise up!
So I'm curious, what did you learn from working on that project and how you've moved forward with your career, other projects that you've worked on? What have you taken from Mouse Guard that, you know, still lives on in your filmography?
Well, I definitely love it. I think it's the most special thing ever. It's got to be made at some point. Hopefully I can help that happen at some point. That's where I met Matt Reeves. That's where I met Andy Serkis. You know, I kind of started to learn a bit about the process of motion capture, even though that was going to be a full-on Avatar level. It wasn't going to be live action, you know. So, you know, I got my feet wet with what I was going to be doing here in Apes, you know. So I guess it was a natural choice for the studio. After the Mouse Guard thing went down, they said, you know, what would you do with Planet of the Apes? I can see the jump there.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. I love it. And there's so much more you've not seen that we did. It's incredible.
My whole heart's just
dying.
What
that little thing that I released out there was done before we even had a script and before we developed the studio and built all the sets and did all the concept art. I have so much stuff. It's amazing. It's just sitting there on a hard drive waiting to be woken up. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Hopefully after this, people will be like, you know what? What about that Mouse Guard
thing
he was working
on? Do some
on?
Apes, do some mice, do some dinosaurs next, and then, like, you know, do some squirrels or something, you know, be the animal guy.
Beautiful. Well, that's my time with you today. Thank you so much for chatting with me.
Nice to meet you.
All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes and hopefully those Mouse Guard things that we alluded to earlier at slashfilm.com and linked inside the show notes for this episode. Slashfilm Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.